Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Our listener support campaign continues. You can become one of our Patreon supporters at the level of $2 or more per month at patreon.greatdetectives.net. But today our focus is on our one-time donations, and you can support the show over at support.greatdetectives.net or by using the Zelle app to send a box13@greatdetectives.net or by mail to Adam Graham, P.O. Box 15913, Boise, Idaho 83715. And if you do support the show at a level of $25 or more, we can happily go ahead and send you a Colonial Radio Theater audio drama. Options available include Perry Mason and Father Brown, and we'll send those with a donation of $25 or more. If you send along a donation of $75 or more, I'll happily send your choice of either Poirot, The Complete Short Stories, or Miss Marple, The Complete Short Stories, each volume collecting all of Agatha Christie's short stories about her two most beloved sleuths. A full list of available thank you gifts can be found over at support.greatdetectives.net. Well, now it's time for today's special. And one thing that I've been asked quite a bit over the years is about doing Perry Mason, who really that character so popularized by Raymond Burr's portrayal. The challenge is that while there was a radio show and while there are 300 episodes in existence, the series was serialized. And so those 300 episodes, they don't all connect, and they don't add up to a complete story. However, this wasn't the only legal series that Earl Stanley Gardner created. For radio, he helped create the series A Life in Your Hands, which followed a wealthy retired lawyer who came to cases to serve as amicus curiae, the friend of the court, and to get to the bottom of tough-to-solve cases. This one was enjoyable and really the main series where we get some actual legal drama. So we're going to go ahead and take a listen to today's episode, which is an episode of A Life in Your Hands. This is the Rooming House Murder, and the original air date, September 13th, 1949, so just a little bit less than 70 years ago. Let's go ahead and take a listen.
Rolling Cigarettes present Earl Stanley Gardner's A Life in Your Hands. Did you hear the shot fired? Where were you standing? When did you miss the gun? Listen while we place A Life in Your Hands. You never know when you step from the safety of your home, when you may witness a violent death and be called upon to testify as to what you saw and heard, and suddenly find yourself with a life in your hands. Murder is a dark enigma that strikes fear into the heart of man. Strange, baffling, mysterious. But the darkest crime one man can invent, another man can unravel. Such a man is Jonathan Kegg, created by Earl Stanley Gardner, the world's most popular writer of mysteries. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jonathan Kegg.
Good evening. As each of us has the right to trial by jury, so each of us has the duty to bear witness truthfully when we're called upon to do so. It might happen to you tomorrow. Does that sound far-fetched? don't be too sure. For even now, somewhere in the city, there may be a crime in the making.
Come in. Door's unlocked.
I'm sorry to bother you, Mrs. O'Malley, but I can't find any towels in my room.
Oh, my goodness, I believe I did forget to put fresh towels in there. I'll get them for you right away. Mm. You like your room?
Oh, I just love it. So bright and airy. Oh, what are you making? Curtains?
Oh, yes. I made all the curtains in the house. As a matter of fact, it seems all I do is sew. Make my clothes, slip covers, just about everything, I guess. My old electric machine goes a lot of the time.
Well, that's wonderful, Mrs. O'Malley. I wish I could do things like that.
I'll be glad to show you how, dear, anytime. Oh, here are your towels.
Thank you. Oh, what time is supper?
6:30, sharp. You'll meet all the other boarders then. There's one of them, Mr. Smith, who can be a little difficult. Well, you'll get used to it. Be sure you're on time.
I will. And don't worry, Mrs. O'Malley. Your Mr. Smith won't bother me.
More potatoes, Mr. Cohen?
Oh, no, thank you, Mrs. O'Malley. I couldn't eat another thing. Your supper, as usual, was delicious.
Oh, thank you.
You certainly know the way to a man's heart, Hilda. Too bad the late Mr. O'Malley isn't still here to enjoy such wonderful foods, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You care for anything else, Mr. Smith?
Not a thing. Don't you think you're lucky, Miss Winthrop, to find a place to live with a cook like Hilda?
Why, I think Mrs. O'Malley is a very good cook.
How long you been in town, Miss Winthrop?
About 10 days. I just got a job at Parker and Close.
Oh, the advertising agency. What do you do?
Well, so far I'm just learning the ropes. I majored in advertising at college, and this is my first job.
Well, say now, I've met Tom Parker. Maybe I could put in a word for you. That never hurts, you know.
That'd be very kind, Mr. Smith.
What are you trying to do, Bill? Get us fired?
You haven't minded my doing you favors, Ruby, have you?
Haven't I?
Now, please, please, we don't want Miss Winthrop should get the wrong impression.
She won't be getting any wrong impression by finding out that Bill Smith is a heel.
Oh. Well, that'll do. I don't care for bickering in my dining room.
And I don't care for that fat slug. Why don't you throw him out? What's he got on you?
Don't take on so, Ruby. You and me, good friends. Say, how's that boy of yours getting along in school?
Are you devil? You filthy
lot. Ruby.
Excuse me, please. I'm going to my room.
That gets every time. She can't stand it. Hey, you see, Miss Winthrop, Ruby's a stripper in a joint on 3rd Street. She's got a boy in military school. He's about 14 now. He don't know how Mama makes a living.
If you'll excuse me, please, Mrs. O'Malley. I'm meeting a friend. I expect to be in around 10.
What's the matter with her?
There are people who don't think you're very funny, Mr. Smith.
Oh, yeah? Well, don't think there isn't something about that hoity-toity young lady she wouldn't want broadcast. And I'll find out what it is.
I suppose you will. Now, if we're all through, I'll clear off the dishes.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll be through with my coffee in just a few seconds, Mrs. O'Malley.
Take your time, Mr. Cohen. There's no hurry.
So now you'll try to get something on that girl. Why do you always have to get something on everybody? Tell me why. You don't want money.
Well, I'll tell you, Izzy. When Bill Smith says jump, I like to see folks jump. They know they'd better. By the way, Jacob, how are things in Albany these days?
Someday your yearning for power will go too far. Someday Bill Smith is going to say jump to the wrong person.
Why so quiet? It's only a little after 10.
I don't want to make a bad impression on my landlady the first night.
Ah.
She's still up. I can hear the electric sewing machine going.
If you never get in later than this, you'll be a star boarder. Say, how do you think you're going to like your new job?
Give me a chance, Bruce. I've hardly started.
Well, I know I'm going to like having you work there.
Now, how could you know that? We only met day before yesterday.
Don't worry, I know. Kiss?
Oh, Bruce, no.
Don't be like that. Come in.
Wait, did you hear something?
All I hear is the music that sings in my ears when I'm with you.
Oh, be serious. It sounded like a shot.
Probably a car backfiring. Forget it. How about that kiss, baby?
Now, stop it, Bruce. I hardly know you.
Well, looks like you kids are having fun.
Mrs. LaSalle, I didn't know you were here.
Obviously. Don't mind me, kid.
What are you doing up this late?
Late? I'm just going out to work.
Yes, please.
Hey, what's that?
Meyer! He's been shot!
Izzy, what are you yelling about?
What's going on out there? What's all the noise about?
It's Smith! Call the police! Somebody killed him!
Sit down, Mrs. Van Ryn.
It's very kind of you to receive me, Mr. Keg. I know how busy you are, but I simply had to talk to you.
If I can be of service, I'm only too happy.
My husband is Colonel James Van Ryn, the Commandant of Macon Military Academy.
Yes?
The mother of one of our students, Bobby LaSalle, is on trial for the murder of a man named Smith.
Oh, yes. That's the case the papers have called the rooming house murder. I've read about it.
As far as I can tell, Mr. Keg, Ruby LaSalle is going to be convicted of that killing. And she didn't do it. I'm sure she didn't.
But how can you be sure, Mrs. Van Ryn? As I recall, the murder was committed with her gun, and she had plenty of motive.
That's just it, Mr. Keg. The motive. The district attorney says she killed this man Smith so he wouldn't tell her son she made her living as a stripper.
That's right.
Well, he knows now. He not only knows how his mother made the money to support him, he also thinks she may be a murderer. She must have known that would happen. Now, what had she to gain by killing this Smith?
People do many strange things under emotional strain, Mrs. Van Ryn.
I've met her, Mr. Keg. She's been to the school several times. She may not have had all the educational advantages in the world. She may not earn her living in the most conventional way, but I swear that she's a good woman. Not a murderer. Please help her.
Your Honor, I request the court's permission to enter the case of the state versus Ruby LaSalle as amicus curiae.
Why, Mr. Keg? Are there facts of which the court is not aware?
I have been persuaded that that is possible, Your Honor.
What facts?
I don't know yet, Your Honor. I hope further cross-examination will reveal such facts.
I'm afraid the court cannot grant your request on that basis, Mr. Keg.
If the court please, the state has urged that Ruby LaSalle killed William Smith in order that her son would not discover how she earned her living. And to strengthen this argument, it has shown how for years Ruby has struggled and sacrificed to provide for that son. In the light of that struggle, and for the sake of that son, let us leave nothing undone to find the truth.
Looks to me a little like a fishing expedition, Mr. Keg. But in view of the many services you have rendered this court, I will permit it. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Mr. Keg is very well known for his ability to learn the truth through cross-examination. As amicus curiae, he will serve neither the prosecution nor the defense. He will seek the truth, no matter whom it helps or hurts. You may proceed, Mr. Keg.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to recall the defendant, Ruby LaSalle. Mrs. LaSalle, it has been established that William Smith was killed with a 25 caliber automatic pistol which belonged to you. Where did you keep that gun?
In the drawer of the night table by my bed.
When was the last time you saw it?
I'm not sure. A couple of weeks before the murder, I guess.
When did you notice it was gone?
I didn't. First I knew it was when the cops found it by Bill's body.
Did you keep the door to your room locked when you were out?
No. No, there are no locks in any of the rooms.
In other words, anyone in the house could have gone into your room and taken that gun?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Tell me, Mrs. LaSalle, were you and Mr. Smith friendly?
I hated him.
Yet, it has been testified that you went out with him on several occasions. Why did you do that?
I never wanted to go. But Bill said he'd tell Bobby, my son, about my job at the club, if I didn't do what he said.
Mrs. O'Malley, how long had you known Mr. Smith?
For over 30 years, Bill and my late husband used to travel for the same company.
How long ago did he come to live at your boarding house?
About 12 years ago. When Mr. O'Malley died, I took the insurance money and bought the house. Mr. Smith was my first boarder.
Did you ever have any trouble with him?
Well, not exactly trouble. He was loud and overbearing, and several people moved out rather than put up with him, but there was never any real trouble.
Where were you when the shot was fired?
I was in my room, sewing.
Did you hear the shot?
No, the sewing machine was making a good deal of noise. The first thing I heard was Mr. Cohen shouting.
Thank you, Mrs. O'Malley. That will be all. I should like to recall Mr. Isidore Cohen.
Mr. Cohen, take the stand.
Mr. Cohen, how long had you known Mr. Smith?
About 3 years since I come to live at Mrs. O'Malley's.
Was Mrs. LaSalle living there at the time?
No, Ruby moved in about 6 months later.
Did Smith and Mrs. LaSalle seem friendly?
Well, at first they did, and then after a while I noticed he was needling her about the boy.
Needling? Please explain what you mean, Mr. Cohen.
Oh, he'd say stuff like, wouldn't Bobby be proud if he knew Mama was a stripper? You know the kind of thing. He did it to everyone.
He needled everyone?
Yeah, that's right. There was something queer about Smith. He couldn't be happy till he found out something about everyone and then needled them. He drove 5 boarders out of that house in the 3 years I lived there.
That's very interesting, Mr. Cohen. Tell me, what do you do for a living?
I'm a bookkeeper for the John Hill Company downtown.
How long have you worked there?
About 3 years.
I see. Mr. Cohen, what did Bill Smith have on you? What did he needle you about?
Me? Well, nothing at all.
But you've just testified that Smith needled everyone. You've lived in that house for 3 years. Surely he needled you, too. What about?
Bill Smith had nothing on me.
Would you mind stepping down for just a moment, Mr. Cohen? I would like to recall Mrs. LaSalle for a few questions. Mrs. LaSalle, you've heard what Mr. Cohen has said about Smith's habit of needling people. In your opinion, is that the truth?
That's right.
Do you recall what particular remarks he would make to Mr. Cohen that seemed to upset him?
Well, when Bill would get on his, he usually made some crack about Albany.
Albany? Did he ever say anything else?
Oh, I don't... Yeah, sometimes he called him Jacob. That'd really drive Cohen wild.
Thank you, Mrs. LaSalle. That is all. Now, Mr. Cohen, will you please return to the stand? Well, Mr. Cohen, suppose we were to investigate in Albany for someone named Jacob, who probably got into some sort of trouble about 3 years ago. That's when you came to live at Mrs. O'Malley. What do you think we'd find? What did Smith have on you?
I told you, he... what's the use? You'll find out anyway. My real name is Jacob Baum, and I'm wanted in Albany for embezzlement. Smith found out about it somehow.
Did he try to blackmail you?
No, that was the crazy part of the guy. He just needled all the time.
Where were you when the shot was fired?
I was in my room reading.
And what did you do?
Well, I listened for a minute, and I went out in the hall. Smith's door was ajar. I looked in the room, saw him lying dead. Then I yelled for help.
When you listened after the shot, what did you hear?
I didn't hear anything.
Not anything?
No, I don't think so. But then with that sewing machine going in Mrs. O'Malley's room, I probably wouldn't have heard anyone who was trying to be quiet.
I see. And how long after the shot did you go out into the hall?
It must have been about a minute, maybe. I wasn't sure it was a shot, and I debated a while before I went out.
That's all. Your Honor, 2 facts have been brought out that indicate we need further witnesses.
The court will call anyone you want, Mr. Keg, and that person must testify.
Jonathan Keg is about to call his witnesses. Two people who had absolutely no connection with the crime, except that they happened to be in a certain place at a certain time. If one of the next witnesses were you, could you recall what you have heard? Your responsibility would be great, for you would hold a life in your hands. After a brief recess, during which Jonathan Keg dispatched a marshal to bring a new exhibit to the courtroom, the court has reconvened and Betty Winthrop has been called to the stand.
Miss Winthrop, where were you when the shot was fired?
I was standing just inside the front door, talking to Bruce Foster.
Did you hear the shot distinctly?
Well, it was a little muffled, but I thought it came from inside the house.
Then what happened?
We were discussing it when Ruby LaSalle came up and spoke to us.
Mrs. LaSalle was leaving the house?
Yes, she said she was going to work.
Tell me, Miss Winthrop, did much time elapse between the shot and when Ruby came to the front door?
No, not a long time.
Long enough for her to leave Smith's room and come downstairs so quietly you didn't hear her?
I think it would have been possible. You see, the stairs are carpeted, and with the sewing machine going, I don't think we'd have heard her.
Thank you, Miss Winthrop. That'll be all for the moment. I'd like to call Mr. Bruce Foster to the stand. Mr. Foster, did you hear the shot?
I didn't notice especially, no.
You were standing talking to Miss Winthrop. She heard the shot and you didn't. Can you explain that?
Frankly, I had my mind on something else. If you must know, Mr. Keg, I was trying to get Betty to kiss me goodnight. And it wasn't going too well.
Order. Order in the court.
I think I understand. After Miss Winthrop heard the shot, did you stop talking and listen?
I don't think so. I remember thinking that Betty was just trying to distract me so I wouldn't kiss her, and I didn't want to be put off.
Did you hear the sewing machine going?
Yeah. Yeah, Betty mentioned it as we came in, and that's how we knew Mrs. O'Malley was still up.
Your Honor, we have Mrs. O'Malley's electric sewing machine here in court. I would like the court's permission to conduct an experiment.
I'm not sure I follow your line of questioning, Mr. Keg. Can you connect all this up?
Yes, Your Honor, I can, and very quickly now.
In that case, you may proceed.
Bailiff, will you connect that machine to an outlet? And while that's going on, I'd like Mrs. O'Malley to identify this machine.
Mrs. O'Malley, will you please step forward and identify the sewing machine?
Well, I must say things have come to a pretty pass when people don't take your sewing machine right out of your room.
Is that your machine, madam?
Yes, it is.
How do you operate the machine, Mrs. O'Malley?
You press this lever here with your knee. See?
Thank you, Mrs. O'Malley. You may sit down. Now, Mr. Foster, I want you to listen as I turn on this machine. Is that the sound you heard that night?
Yeah, I think so. It was upstairs, of course, but that's what it sounded like.
Now, did it go off and on like this?
I don't know. I don't remember it sounding like that.
Did it keep going like this?
That sounds more like it.
That's all, Mr. Foster. I would like Miss Winthrop back on the stand. Miss Winthrop, you heard the sewing machine just now. Is that the sound you heard that night?
Yes, Mr. Keg.
Do you remember the machine going off at all? Or did it run continuously?
I hadn't thought of it before, but now I recall that it never stopped once until Mr. Cohen shouted.
That's all, Miss Winthrop. I'd like to recall Hilda O'Malley. Mrs. O'Malley, what were you sewing that night?
Why, I believe I was hemming napkins. Yes, I'm sure I was.
Here is a large handkerchief. Will you step over to the machine and show me how you would hem that?
That's ridiculous. Besides, this already has a hem.
Just do as I ask, please.
Oh, all right.
That's fine, Mrs. O'Malley. When you put in a hem, you run one edge through the machine, then stop and start another edge. Is that correct?
Yes, I guess so.
What sort of hem were you putting in a napkin that kept that machine going continuously for 5 minutes?
It didn't go for 5 minutes. They're lying.
We know Bill Smith had to have a club over everyone he knew. What did he have on you?
He didn't have anything on me.
How much rent did he pay?
I don't remember.
You don't remember because Bill Smith didn't pay any rent. He had a tremendous hold over you, Hilda O'Malley. So you tied that knee press back so the sewing machine would run and went into his room and shot him with the gun you stole from Ruby LaSalle. What did he have on you?
It isn't true. It's a plaza. I'm so confused.
How did the late Mr. O'Malley die, Hilda?
You're a devil. You know everything. All right. I killed Bill Smith. He deserves it. My husband was drunk one night, and by mistake, he took a dose of arsenic we used around the garden. Bill was there at the time. He advised me not to say anything so there'd be no complications with the insurance. When the doctor finally got there, he thought it was a natural death. And Bill sponged off me, threatening to have the body exhumed. I'm glad I killed him.
Order. Order. Order in the court. Mr. Keg, I would be interested in knowing how you arrived at the truth.
Three people could have killed Smith, Your Honor. We knew the motives of Mrs. LaSalle and Mr. Cohen. Neither seemed strong enough to lead to murder. I didn't know if Hilda O'Malley had a motive, but I felt she must have had one.
I'm not sure I follow you.
Bill Smith made a point, almost a fetish, of knowing something about everyone with whom he was associated. Something they wanted to hide. It was almost a mathematical certainty that he knew something of that kind about Hilda.
I see.
Now, look at the timing. Smith came to live at Hilda's boarding house right after her husband died. It seemed possible that Hilda's guilty secret was connected with the death of her husband. If so, and Smith knew of it, it would give her a powerful reason to kill.
But the sewing machine, Mr. Keg, that seemed to give her a perfect alibi.
Why was everyone in the house conscious of the sewing machine that night, Your Honor? They'd heard it so often, it must have been the most normal sound in the world to them. And yet, they were all strangely aware of it that one night. There had to be something abnormal about the way it ran. Once I knew that, then Hilda's alibi evaporated.
Mr. Keg, you've again proved the accuracy of your fine reputation. I should like to extend to you the court's sincere thanks and congratulations.
Thank you, Your Honor. A most interesting line of reasoning, Mr. Keg.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace.
I'd like to call our listeners' attention to a most interesting event to be heard during this half hour next week. That is, the return to the air of my good friend Art Linkletter as the star of that popular program, People Are Funny. It's been a pleasure to be with you these past weeks, and I sincerely urge you to listen every Tuesday night at the same time for lots of fun and laughs to the Raleigh Cigarette program, People Are Funny. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Keg. And friends, Raleigh Cigarettes extend to you a most cordial invitation to join again with your old friend Art Linkletter for the rollicking fun to be heard on People Are Funny every Tuesday at the same time. And smokers, remember, there are four extra coupons in each carton of Raleigh Plain End cigarettes. So buy them by the carton and get your Raleigh premiums 40% faster. A Life in Your Hands is created by Earl Stanley Gardner with script by Bob McKee. The program is produced by Jack Simpson and directed by Homer Heck, with musical effects by Adele Scott. Jonathan Keg is played by Ned LaFever. This is Myron Wallace inviting you to be with us next week when Raleigh Cigarettes, the pack with the coupon on the back, will return to the air that popular program, People Are Funny.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back. Well, as usual, these cases end with a solid reveal of the truth by our hero when he gets into acting as Amicus Curiae. And overall, just a really solid, enjoyable episode. Now, as indicated in this particular episode, The End, A Life in Your Hands really was a summer replacement series that NBC did keep bringing back. And I'm thankful for it because I think every episode of the series has some really good points of interest. So I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. All right, well, I do want to go ahead and thank our Patreon supporter of the day. And I want to go ahead and thank Kelly. Kelly has been one of our Patreon supporters since September of 2018. And Kelly is currently supporting us at the rookie level of $2 or more per month. Thanks so much for your support, Kelly. All right, well, that will actually do it for today. Join us back here tomorrow as our Listener's Choice Countdown continues. As we get to the next series that is tied for number 6 in our countdown. In the meantime, send your comments to box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.